Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namaste Saraswata Deva Gauravani Pratarane Nirvishesha Shunyavani Pashtatya Resha Tarane Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasani Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Bhagavatam Chapter 84 Verse 16 Shri Munaya Ocho Yan Maya Tattva Vid Uttama Vayam Vimohita Vishva Srajam Adhishvara Yag Kishita Vyayati Guda Ihaya Aho Vichitram Bhagavat Vichestitam Srimunaya Ucho Yanmayaya Tattva Vit Uttama Vayam Vimohita Vishvas Jamadishvara Yadi Shita Vya Yadi Guda Ihaya Aho Vichitram Bhagavat Vichestitam Yanmayaya Tattva Vid Uttama Vayam Vimohita Vishvasrajam Adishvara Yadishita Vyayati Guda Ihaya Aho Vichitram Bhagavad Vichestitam
Aho Vichitram Bhagavad Vichestitam
Shri Munaya Ucho.
The great sages said,
Yeah. Whose Maya, by the power of illusion, Tattva, of the truth, Vit, knowers, Uttama, best, Vayam, we, Vimohita, confused, Vishva, of the universe, Srajam, of the creators, Adishvara, chief, Yat, the fact that, Ishitavyayati, the Supreme Lord, pretends to be the subject to higher control. Guda, hidden, Ihaya, by his activities. Aho, Vichitram, amazing, Bhagavat, of the Supreme Lord, Vichestitam, the activity. Translation, the great sages said, your power of illusion has totally bewildered us, the most exalted knowers of the truth and leaders among the universal creators. Ah, how amazing is the behavior of the Supreme Lord. He covers himself with his human-like activities and pretends to be subject to superior control. Purport, the sages have characterized the Lord's statements as inscrutable. How this is so is stated here. His words and activities bewildered even the most learned when he plays at subordinating himself to his own servants. Translation, the great sages said, your power of illusion has totally bewildered us, the most exalted knowers of the truth and leaders among universal creation. How amazing is the behavior of the Supreme Lord. He covers himself with his human-like activities and pretends to be subject to superior control. So, here the sages are speaking in response to the Lord's speech. The problem is that Krishna says, oh, I am so grateful because I have the opportunity to meet the Devatas and the sages and the yogis, and I get purified like everybody else, which is a politeness on the part of the Lord, because he likes to praise his devotees and those who are following Dharma. At the same time, we know that sages and yogis, etc., appreciate the Supreme Lord because of his show of power. We'll find that the primitive conceptions of God and the elementary perceptions of God concern the God as the most powerful entity. And usually when people will talk about God and you ask who is God, well, it says he is the most powerful person, or he's the creator of everything. So we want to put God in a very special position of great power and knowledge and perfection. So this, of course, is reflected in the conceptions of God that we have in the Vedic literatures. This is one of the conceptions. And it is quite a common conception even in the Vedic literatures. We regard God as the great creator of everything. And in fact, if we look at the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas, a lot of the text concerns the creation. There are 10 topics in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Mahapuranas. And the first topic is Sarga, and the second topic is Visarga, and the third topic is Sthiti. So Sarga means creation, the creation which is directly carried out by the Supreme Lord. And if we look in this first canto, second canto, and third cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll find there are many descriptions of how the Supreme Lord glances over Prakriti and instigates it to change into Mahatattva, Ahankara, and the other elements, and then make the universes, and then enter into the universes. So this this description is given many times, and there's at least 6 different occasions when the universal form of the Lord is described, how he is the creator of all material elements and senses of the jivas. So this is even a topic of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord as the creator, the powerful entity. So it cannot be ignored. It is an aspect of the Supreme Lord. And this is carried over. Of course, the creator of the Lord is basically a Paramatma conception, and Paramatma is the Supreme Lord. He creates and maintains and annihilates the world, pervades the world, knows everything. So this is the Lord who is the creator and the knower of everything, Paramatma, in the form of Shirdakshaya Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Mahavishnu. And we know from our Gaudiya philosophy that actually the Paramatma is not the ultimate realization of the Lord. It's not the complete realization of the Lord. We have Brahman, Paramatma, and then Bhagavan. So Bhagavan realization is a superior realization. And this, of course, is concluded by the Srimad Bhagavatam itself. It talks about these 3 realizations and puts Bhagavan and then Krishna as Swayam Bhagavan in the supreme position. So the realization of the greatness of God begins with the Paramatma realization. But that is also rejected by devotees of the Lord, and they prefer to realize Bhagavan. So this concept of God is accepted, but at the same time, it is not the ultimate realization which will give the most bliss for the jiva. So what has to be added to this? We know that God is great and has all powers, etc. So beyond that, then we will have other qualities. And are these the combination of these qualities which is attractive to the devotees. So in other words, power is one, the power and knowledge, those are qualities of the Lord, as we see even in Bhagavan. Jnana is one of the qualities of God, and Aishvarya is a quality of God in Bhagavan. But Bhagavan has many more qualities than that. So these are the qualities which the devotees are attracted to. So here the sages are, generally sages and yogis and others, appreciate the powerful aspect of the Lord rather than the Supreme Lord in His most personal aspect. Now, that powerful aspect is manifested as Paramatma. It is also there in Bhagavan, and we'll find in many forms of Bhagavan, still the powerful aspect is quite prominent. So that is in all of the Vishnu forms in the spiritual world and many avatar forms. When that power becomes less prominent, apparently, and other qualities become more prominent, that is when we get Krishna. So those who realize Krishna are not interested in the display of power of the Supreme Lord, even though the Lord displays that. That is not the main attraction for the devotees of Krishna. They are rather interested in the sweet aspects of Krishna. So therefore, sages and yogis, they can appreciate Paramatma, and they can also appreciate the forms in the spiritual world, like the Vishnu forms, who manifest great powers. But they become very bewildered when they see Krishna, because he doesn't manifest powers in the same way, and therefore they become confused. And that is mentioned here, where the sages say, we are full of knowledge. We are the persons who have the most knowledge. But we are bewildered by your energy. And we are the controllers of the creation still. And we are the creators of universes. But still, we are bewildered by you. And they're speaking of Krishna. If other forms had appeared, they would not be so much bewildered because they appreciate God showing His powers. But when Krishna appears and He doesn't show His powers, this is a cause of bewilderment. So the immediate cause is that Krishna speaks to everyone at Kurukshetra and says, I'm so fortunate to get the association of great sages and yogis, and I will become purified by this. And the sages understand Krishna as the Supreme Lord, and how are they speaking like this to us and saying He's going to get purified by us? So that's why they say we are completely bewildered by the activities of the Lord. And therefore they say here that actually you appear to be controlled by others, and you hide yourself by your activities, and therefore this is most amazing. So the form of Krishna, to some extent they can realize that actually Krishna is God, but He acts in a completely different way. But at the same time, we should not think that actually when Krishna displays His activities as the Supreme Lord, as Bhagavan, and He displays all of His sweetness, that when He is under the control of His devotees and He expresses this, we should not think that this is some false statement of Krishna, or that His activities are false, that He's simply pretending. If we are to think that the Supreme Form of the Lord Krishna in His sweetness is only pretending to be controlled by His devotees and only pretending to or make statements of humility or submission to others, then we would have to attribute God to being rather deceptive. So we cannot do that also. So that is why it is very confusing for some people, because Krishna is God, and accept Him as God, and yet it seems like He's pretending. And if He's pretending, how can He be God? Because God is the most truthful. He should not pretend at all. So ultimately we have to say that, yes, Krishna is not pretending, really. He is controlled by His devotees. It is not a pretense. He is, of course, supreme controller. He is the creator of all worlds, and Krishna can show that. When Brahma was bewildered by Krishna, he showed, I can do anything. I can bewilder Lord Brahma. I can trick him. He thinks he's going to trick me, but I will trick him. And he tricked him so far as making cowherd boys and calves, which were not the real ones, and Brahma thought they were the real ones, and he put them in the cave. And they weren't even the real ones. And that's what Krishna did. And Brahma is the creator of the material world. But he can't even touch the cowherd boys or the calves. They're superior to him. So Krishna can bewilder Brahma very easily. That he illustrated later on again when Brahma came back after 1 year and he saw Krishna playing in the fields. And then he looked in the cave and then he saw cowherd boys are in the cave sleeping with the calves. And he looked outside and he saw the calves and the cowherd boys, same ones, were playing in the field with Krishna. So he said, how is this possible? It's not possible. Therefore, one of these sets must be false. Either the ones in the cave are actually fake cowherd boys, or the ones outside are fake. But then he looked again, and he couldn't figure out which ones were the fake ones. And then he thought, maybe they're both fake. And maybe the real cowherd boys and calves are somewhere else. And then he understood, I can't really understand anything. It's impossible for me to detect. So that is the extent of Krishna's power of deception. If he wants to really deceive somebody like Brahma, he can do that. And Brahma doesn't know who's the real cowherd boys and calves. And then he looked again, and then suddenly he saw the cowherd boys and calves turned into forms of Vishnu. And obviously Brahma knows Vishnu because he knows that Vishnu is his creator and he comes from the lotus, etc. And it's Vishnu who gives him the power to do the creation. And now he saw not one Vishnu, but he saw millions of Vishnus because there were millions of cowherd boys and millions of calves. And suddenly everyone became Vishnu forms. So at that point then he realized Krishna is the source of all the Vishnu forms and I'm just one of the Brahmas coming from one of the Vishnus. But then he realized his own insignificance. I'm nothing. So Krishna was able to do that in an instant. And then suddenly Brahma looked again and all that disappeared and all he thought was Krishna standing there. And what was Krishna doing? He had some rice in his hand. He was going to eat a little bit of rice and he was in his cowherd boy outfit and he was just a little boy. And then Brahma realized this form is actually superior to all the Vishnu forms and superior to me. But he certainly doesn't look like it. He's just like a little boy. So then he said, this is the greatness of Krishna. He's superior to everything, but he doesn't look like it at all. But he is. And it's not a disguise that Vishnu is disguising himself as Krishna. Right? As Krishna is the creator of all the other forms or the manifestor of all the Vishnu forms and all the universes. So he realized at that point the powers of the Supreme Lord of Krishna, plus that actually this form of Krishna as a small cowherd boy is the ultimate form. So it's very difficult to realize that, and Brahma had a realization at that point that that little form of a little boy is actually superior to all other forms. But generally, he cannot understand, and the devatas cannot understand, and that's how he got so bewildered. When he saw Krishna playing in the field with the cowherd boys, and they're taking lunch, and then he was looking at Krishna, looking at the cowherd boys, and they were all there sitting in the field like little boys. And they were opening their lunch packs, and their mothers had made, you know, different types of food for them for lunch, and they got all excited with the food, and they were trading their food with each other, and tasting each other's food, and getting their hands all full of food. Both hands were full of food, and Krishna had food in both hands, and food in his mouth, and food all over his body. And then Brahma saw this, and he said, how can this be God?
because he is used to seeing the Supreme Lord in Brahmaloka, where they offer yajna, Vedic mantras, and everyone's very pure and everything, and they're offering mantras very formally, and then they offer to the Supreme Lord, and he accepts their offerings. Huh? And then he saw a little boy here smeared with food, and he said, how can this be God? How can this be our Supreme Lord who's supposed to protect us? So therefore he said, well, I'll test him and see if he's actually God. So normally, even Brahma has difficulty appreciating this form of Krishna as actually Supreme Lord, because he doesn't act like it. His acts are quite different, and his words are quite different. And that's what Krishna did here in Kurukshetra, where he asked the sages, oh, you please give me your association, because I'm a fallen soul, and you can purify me. So this is very confusing for everyone. They would expect the Supreme Lord said, yes, I give you blessings, I will protect you, and I'll show my powers and annihilate the demons and like that. But he doesn't do that. He's apologizing to them and praying for their mercy. So the Supreme Lord, as Krishna, is very bewildering to a lot of people who expect the Lord to show greatness. And even Krishna is so bewildering that he even bewilders the great devotees. So he bewilders the Devatas and Lord Brahma and the people who expect to see the powers of God. But he even bewilders his devotees at times. He wouldn't expect that, but he also does that. So this is his yoga maya potency. It's not Mahamaya, because Mahamaya is more materialist, but Krishna has yoga maya, and by that power he reveals things or hides things from his devotees. And it's described even for Lord Brahma, actually it's yoga maya working, because he's part of the Leela of Krishna. So it's not that Brahma is really under maya, because at the beginning of the day of life of Brahma, the Lord said, in this lifetime I guarantee you will not be bewildered. So if he becomes bewildered, then it would be breaking of the Supreme Lord's promise. So he never got bewildered, but the Lord, if he wants to, can make him become bewildered. Just as he made Arjuna bewildered at the battle of Kurukshetra, and then Arjuna throws down his bow and begins crying. So that's also not maya, because he's a pure devotee of the Lord. So it's carried out by the Lord by his other potency, where he hides certain things and the devotees become confused. So that power operates in relation to Brahma and others, and even in relation to even great devotees. The power of the Lord is so great that he can do this to everyone. And he can do it even to Lord Balaram. So that is how Balaram detected Krishna was behind all of this. Balaram actually didn't know for 1 year that Krishna was all the cowherd boys and calves. He was also bewildered. And he thought these were the regular cowherd boys and calves. And he didn't know it was actually Krishna. And then after 1 year, then he was looking at the cows on Govardhan Hill, and he saw the cowherd boys at the bottom of Govardhan Hill with the calves. And then he saw the cows run down the hill after the calves. And he saw the cowherd men running after the cows. And they could not control the cows. And the cows ran down the hill until they came to the calves. And then when they saw the calves, they were completely overcome by that and began licking their calves and feeding them milk. And then the cowherd men came down, and they were very angry at the cows because they wouldn't listen to them. But when they saw their children, the cowherd boys, suddenly they forgot all about the cows, and they embraced their sons, and they began shedding tears of love. So then Balaram said, this is rather strange. Why are the cows so attracted to those calves? For they've given birth to new calves, but they don't care for the new calves. They're more attracted to these old calves from last year. And why are the cowherd men so attracted to their sons? So he thought, there's something very strange. This is not normal. And then he thought, maybe it's the Devatas hiding themselves as calves and cows and doing something. No, I know what Devatas are. I know their powers. Maybe it's Rakshasas. can't be Rakshasas because I can detect Rakshasas. Maybe it's sages. I can detect sages also. Actually, nobody can bewilder me except Krishna. So I said, this must be Krishna. So he looked very carefully and saw everybody was actually Krishna. And that's why everybody was attracted to him. The cowherd men were attracted to their sons because of actually Krishna. And the cows were attracted to the calves because of Krishna. So then he understood. But it took him 1 year, and only by the will of Krishna, after 1 year, he allowed Balaram to discover this. So even Balaram is bewildered by Krishna. That is his power. Krishna is the most powerful, even though he is a small cowherd boy. But he hides his powers in different ways from different people. And then he reveals those powers. So he revealed his powers to Balaram, he reveals his powers to Brahma. And at the same time, he is still that same cowherd boy. He is not a Vishnu form who is revealing powers. He's still the cowherd boy. So Krishna, as a cowherd boy, has all these powers. So it's not that Vishnu takes the form of Krishna and pretends to be a little cowherd boy and acts like that. It's actually he is Supreme Lord and he has all these powers inherently. So Aishwarya is there in Krishna. There's a definition of Bhagavan is there. He has six qualities. The first is Aishwarya, or great powers, and the second is virya, which is the inconceivable potency. So those are there in Krishna, because he's also Bhagavan. But Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He is the most complete manifestation of all those powers and all those potencies, inconceivable potencies. That's what makes him special. And at the same time, though he has these powers, Krishna has other powers as Swayam Bhagavan, or other qualities. And what are those qualities? Those are not powers at all. They are qualities, but they are qualities of sweetness, which are not qualities of power. So Krishna has both. He has greater powers than Vishnu forms, Aishwarya, but he also has something else, which is much greater, and that is the sweetness or the Madhurya aspect. And this is what becomes prominent in the form of Krishna. So he hides his power aspects, even though he has them, and he reveals them also, but greater than that are his aspects of Madhurya. So because of these aspects, the sages become bewildered, the yogis become bewildered. They're expecting God to show all his powers, but instead Krishna forms sweetness. He shows his sweetness to everybody. The sweetness means, or Madhurya means, not just Madhurya Rasa, but that means in general, Krishna establishes very intimate relationships with his devotees. And to do that, he does not act like God. He acts like everybody else. So there's equality, not that he's in a superior position. And even Krishna goes in an inferior position. So therefore, Krishna is inferior to Mother Yasoda and Nanda. He is only a small child. And he is under their protection. And he has to do whatever they say, because he's a small child. So he has all powers of God, but he's more attracted to being the son of Mother Yasoda. And therefore he reveals other qualities in relation to being the son. So one of the qualities of the son is you're obedient to the parents. So therefore Krishna obeys whatever Mother Yasoda says. He has to obey her. And it's not pretending. So we say that one of the qualities, the highest quality of bhakti, is that it attracts Krishna and controls Krishna. Krishna Karshani. So when a person has prema, then the Lord comes under their control. That is so even for Vishnu forms, because we find that in the story of Ambarish, for instance, the Lord says, I am in the heart of my devotee is in me. And, whatever the devotee wants, I will do. So if Durvasa Muni wants forgiveness and protection from the Sudarshan Chakra, you go to my devotee, he's in charge, not me. So even for Vishnu forms, they're also very attracted and controlled by their devotees. But with Krishna, it is even more so, because the relationship is one of great sweetness. And Krishna hides his powers, or does not reveal his powers in the same way. And instead, he acts like a normal person in this world. So he acts as a small boy. More than the other form, Krishna falls under the control of his devotees. So this is not a fault in God, even though God is the controller of everybody else. This is only the prominence of his attraction for his devotees. And that's a good quality in God. God should not show power and be an authoritarian. He should also have great affection for all the jivas. So that great affection is shown by his bhakti for the devotees. The devotees have bhakti for the Lord, and the Lord has bhakti for them. So, in the form of Krishna, the devotee's love is very intense and sweet, and Krishna's love is corresponding to that. It is also very intense and sweet. So therefore, he falls even more under the control of his devotees than any other form of God. And this gives rise to great sweetness in his pastimes. So therefore, in the form of Krishna, we find unique pastimes that we will not find in any other form. So we will not find Krishna being tied up by anybody in other forms. But Krishna, of course, he is tied up by Mother Yasoda and Damodar Lila. But it will not happen with the other forms. So like that, there are many, many activities of Krishna which are unique to Krishna because of his sweetness, the sweet aspect, and his the way he is controlled by his devotees. So this is bewildering to other persons who are expecting that prominent display of power. And they appreciate God in that form more. So that is why I said that to realize Krishna is very, very rare. One has to cultivate that particular type of devotion in which the sweetness is more prominent. And then you realize that form of Krishna. So this is the path that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended for us. We cultivate that very intimate, sweet relationship with Krishna. Even though he has all powers, we're trying to establish an intimate relationship with him. Here we find the others, they cannot quite appreciate that so much because they are appreciating more the greatness of the Supreme Lord. Yes, they also realize he is Supreme Lord, and therefore this is one of his astounding characteristics. He is inscrutable to others. Okay.
Does Krishna enjoy bewildering the demons?
The demons?
Does he enjoy bewildering the demons? Like, demons are inimical to Krishna, and Krishna bewilders them. Is it like, does Krishna enjoy doing that?
Actually, Krishna doesn't hate anybody. He has no partiality to anyone, and he hates nobody as far as people in the material, jivas in the material world are concerned. And if he kills a demon or whatever he does to the demon, it's not done out of hatred or any sort of inimical attitude, because he has great compassion for all living entities, even the demons. So if he bewilders them or hides himself from them, it is not out of animosity or anything, it's actually for their benefit. In other words, the Lord has pastimes, and those pastimes, even killing the demons, for their benefit, and therefore when Krishna kills them, he liberates them. Or when Rama kills someone, they may get elevation in the next lifetime, and become a great king or something. So even if the Lord bewilders the demons, we can say yes, it is a type of enjoyment in the sense that it's part of his lila. And even the killing is a lila as well. But we should understand that there's no way mocking anybody, and it's not done out of inimical intent. Rather, it's for benefit of those particular persons and other persons as well. Every pastime fulfills many purposes. Killing the demon is also beneficial to the devatas and protects the devotees. And it gives benefit to the demon also. So however he does it is part of his pastime, which becomes attractive for the devotees also. In the spiritual world, there must be a certain amount of yoga maya at all times, otherwise it cannot be pastimes. Because everybody knows everything, then you can't have a pastime. So Krishna has to hide certain things from devotees, but it's not, the gain is not done out of any deception. It is done for increasing the pleasure of the devotees. When suddenly they realize everything, they realize the wonderful nature of Krishna and how merciful he is to everyone. I think that means probably the fingertips.
That was another one.
Oh, plus the ends of the... Well, the palms are also red.
The nails.
The nails are red. And then I think the palms are also... Well, that's just ends. Maybe it's a mistranslation or a mistake in the editing or something. Because it's obviously it have to be distinct parts, but have a look at the text actually.
We read that in the past Vedic philosophy was all over the world, but these days it looks like it comes from India.
Mm-hmm. Even in like Mahabharata and Bhagavatam, we have references to the Pandavas going out and controlling different parts of the world, maybe up to China and Tibet and those areas, and maybe Europe also, and then they bring wealth back and bring the kings under control, etc. So there is some references there to that. At the same time, we understand those parts of the world looked like they were not so civilized as the central area of India. So the land of Bharat was centered upon India, even though other parts of the world could be called Bharat at that time because it came under their control. But they weren't to the same degree civilized. So the center was India. So therefore, it seems some ancient times, India has been the center of civilization as far as the earth and the countries we know and the continents we know about. India was the center of that. And the other parts that they developed were influenced by India. That even to some extent is confirmed, I suppose, by modern archaeology and linguistics, etc., because they know that a lot of the languages center upon what's called the Indo-European base or something, which is basically like Sanskrit. All the European languages, most of them, except Finnish and Hungarian, I think, arise from that line. All the European languages come out of that basic Sanskrit base. And so that, of course, they're having a debate whether that arose in India or maybe near the Caspian Sea, somewhere in between that area. So there's some idea like that a lot of the culture came from that. And as far as other things, we do know that the civilization, archaeologically, that's modern theory, that there was ancient civilization here 5,000 years ago or whatever in Indus Valley and places like that. Of course, they have different theories about how that arose and what its influence was on others, but still very, very ancient. And as far as literature is concerned, they all agree that the Vedic texts are the oldest extant literatures in the world, older than the other texts. So even, let's say, archaeologically and linguistically speaking, India does have some basis in the modern world as well.
What would be Australia 5,000 years ago? Can we imagine?
Australia? I don't know. As far as I know, it's not mentioned in the Mahabharata. They mention the whole list of races, but whether we could identify any of those as Australia or not, I don't know.
Must be gender.
Of course, we also don't really know as far as how the continents were in ancient times and whether they were in the same shape and the same, earth can expand and contract into so many things, so we don't really know how much has changed. So there's, of course, studies like that in geography or whatever, and it rises, the sea rises and falls and whatever over time. So we don't really know, what the shape of the earth was in ancient times. 5,000 years ago, maybe we can say that. When you go back yugas, then we don't know.
The Vedic understanding of the Vedic civilization, does that conflict at all with modern understanding of like Roman, ancient Greek empires? Like the Vedic civilization.
And Greek civilization?
Yeah, does that conflict there?
What, in terms of philosophy?
Well, like history, like this battle taking place 5,000 years ago, and Yudhishthira being like emperor of the world.
Well, Greek history doesn't go back that far, because the Greek civilization only started maybe 500 before Christ.
Oh, okay.
Whereas we go back 5,000 years with the battle of Kurukshetra and Krishna, at least that far we're going. You know, but there starts much later. So they have references to earlier times a little bit. They also have similarities. They have the Golden Age, etc. You know, the Golden Age, the Bronze, Silver Age, and the Bronze Age, and the Iron Age. They have similar. They have the gods, the devatas like Indra and Zeus, you know, the thunderbolt and all this. So there's a lot of similarities definitely there. And of course, there is a theory that knowledge and the mathematics and things actually, and the philosophy, a lot of the philosophy, like Plato's philosophy, seem to have come from India, actually. There are similarities there. Though I think in the Mahabharata, I think the Greeks are referred to as like some barbarian race.
Right at the start of the Bhagavad Gita, like literally when the critics are saying things, one of them says that Prabhupada's translation is sort of following the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was going to say a great saint. We were speaking yesterday about how Krishna hides virtues from people.
Mm-hmm.
When people speak about, you know, Chaitanya being just like a great saint and not,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
an actual incarnation of Krishna, is that similar in that respect, like they're having the proper understanding hidden from them?
And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also is what we call a hidden avatar. In other words, when Kali Yuga just said that there is no real avatar of the Lord, there's three avatars in, you know, the other yugas, but the Lord does not appear in Kali Yuga again. So, but of course, we do have the Yuga avatars. But then it is also said even the Kali Yuga avatar is only a Shaktivesh avatar, because of this idea that the Lord only appears in three yugas. But to keep that true, therefore the Kali Yuga avatar is not God, but a jiva who with powers of God. So in that way, there is no avatar in Kali Yuga, and Buddha is also Shaktivesh avatar, and Kalki is also Shaktivesh avatar. So all the appearances in Kali Yuga are not God actually, they're on Shaktivesh. So in that sense, the Lord does not appear in Kali Yuga. There is an exception with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but then he also conforms to this, and therefore he hides himself. So therefore, he doesn't appear as God, he appears as the devotee of God. To conform to that idea of being three yugas, the Lord only appears in three yugas. And that, of course, is for another reason, that is to experience the love of Radha. So therefore, he takes the form of the devotee of Krishna in order to experience the nature of her love and the intensity of her love.
Okay, well.
Well, I have a publication with the it hasn't been word for word, but it's got the original texts and the commentaries of Jiva and Vishnu. I don't know if they sell it. It's here. Yeah, it's here, apparently. It's in the bookshop. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Tell me, Swami Maharaj ki.